By trading for Garrett Crochet and signing Walker Buehler, have the Boston Red Sox and their top-ranked farm system done enough to catch the Yankees? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Wednesday, February 5th. This is your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. Send all your friends to firstpitchpodcast.com to catch every single episode of First Pitch, where we are breaking down just about every single team that matters between now and the start of the regular season. And Troy, I want to get to the Boston Red Sox. We're going to spend most of this episode talking about them from an outside perspective, right? But before that, there were a couple deals going on in Major League Baseball, including one that we said needed to happen during yesterday's Yankees show. We talked about the Yankees just not having any sort of lefties in the pen at all. And just hours after the episode dropped, there was a report that the Yankees have reached a deal to bring back lefty reliever Tim Hill. So they'll add him. 1 year, $2.85 million. There's a club option for 2026. You know, he had he did pretty well with them last year. And the reports are that they're very now happy. They think their bullpen's fantastic. He had a ERA just barely over two in 44 innings with them after he was released by the White Sox, which, not the first guy that they've had success with after he was released by a different team. And you can kind of see the really good pitching development teams are able to take these cast off pitchers and make them into something. I remember, I think it was Luke Weaver was another guy that was, you know, not wanted by previous teams. They fixed Tim Hill in season. The Dodgers fixed Ryan Brazier. They just made a deal to trade him over to the Cubs to make room after he was DFA'd for Kirby Yates. So, is to wrap up the Yankees conversation from yesterday, is Tim Hill enough, or should they go try to find one more lefty in free agency for that pen?
Well, yeah, we talked about it yesterday and we touched on how some of their righties have reverse splits. So I think that Tim Hill could be enough for them, especially with Jonathan Loaisiga set to come back later on in the season. Mm-hmm. They have a solid team, and I think Tim Hill is, while he's obviously not the best person on the roster, adding him to that bullpen and having now one lefty in there is going to work wonders for them down the throughout the season. And I think they can be done with this offseason. There's really nothing else out there that they have to do unless they just want to upgrade at second base. But Tim Hill is a good piece for them, and I think they can call it an offseason and gear up for spring training now.
Yeah, that's one of those. There's always things a team can do, but at this point in the offseason, it's like, is there enough impact for the money you'd spend and things like that? I kind of agree that I think the Yankees are probably done. A team that's not done, we just mentioned them, Ryan Brazier going to the Cubs. This was a bullpen that I kind of felt like was still a weakness even after they traded for Ryan Pressly. Porter Hodge was he was one of their main closers last year after he debuted. Looked really good. He'll now be the primary setup guy. Brazier is probably the other setup guy. They also only have one lefty in their pen, Caleb Thubar. Does it feel like the Cubs, given the fact that you have really six starters, because Colin Rea is going to be there and can go back and forth, do you think that the Cubs have done enough to be cemented as, yes, they are the favorites in the Central, or is it something where they still could get surpassed by somebody?
No, for anybody that's followed me on Twitter at Troy B Baseball again, for those just joining us, I thought that the Cubs cemented themselves as the favorite in the Central when they added Kyle Tucker. Just everything that they've done since then is just added on top of that. And at this point, I think that the Chicago Cubs are going to be now right up there with the Dodgers, Braves, and Phillies for a chance at making the World Series with all that they've done this offseason. They're really going all in on 2025, and it's going to be an exciting year in Chicago.
Yeah. I do think it's really interesting. They've brought in a lot of guys on minor league deals that are like names you've heard of. Brad Keller is there on a minor league deal, could be a starter or a reliever. Phil Bickford, they brought him in from the Yankees on a minor league deal. Ben Heller has been with the Braves, the Pirates, minor league deal. Just there's a lot of guys that like they have in their farm system to hop into that bullpen if they need to. A lot of the guys that I just named don't have any options, but a lot of their bullpen options in the minors and actually a surprising number in the majors do have some options, so they can move guys around a little bit and things like that. But the Cubs, I'm glad to see them actually kind of flexing here, because I've commonly kind of said they feel like the poorest rich team in baseball. Like they just don't spend money like they should be able to. And I think, and I'm gonna try to be a pro here, make a segue. Another team that I think acts like a poor version of a rich team is the Boston Red Sox. It feels like the Boston Red Sox should be able to run one of the largest payrolls in baseball every single year, and they just don't. But you're in a situation this offseason. We already talked about it. They trade Garrett Crochet. They give up pieces out of their farm system, yet they're still ranked one of the best ones in the game. They signed Walker Buehler to, in essence, what was exactly the qualifying offer, right? So they'll have Walker Buehler on the season. They went out and added Aroldis Chapman as a co-closer to go along with Liam Hendricks. And then the position player group is pretty much intact. They're counting on healthy years from Trevor Story, for instance. Initial thoughts, I guess we'll start with the lineup. Initial thoughts on the Boston Red Sox lineup as it is kind of right now. And we're going to use the Fangraphs roster resource if you're following along at home to figure out who's going to play where and all that kind of stuff. But your thoughts on the Boston Red Sox lineup as of now, because I don't think it's bad.
No, it's certainly not a bad lineup, especially if you can have a full healthy season from Trevor Story and Tristan Casas, assuming he's still on the roster by the time the season gets here. But no, it's a good lineup. If you also Jarren Duran can do what he did in 2024 again in 2025, I mean,
he was great.
You're one through five from Duran, Devers, Casas, Trevor Story, and Masataka Yoshida, and even Willier Abreu. That's a solid one through six. That's one of the best one through sixes probably in the American League East, and it's a fantastic lineup.
Yeah, and kind of using the WRC plus metric here based off what they did last year, your top seven guys, when you include Connor Wong, all were above average in WRC plus in that lineup. So it's a potent lineup. The area where I do think you're a little bit deficient here is defense, and especially in the infield, right? Trevor Story, I have my doubts as to whether he can be a above average shortstop at this point in his career. You know, he's had elbow surgery. He's in his 30s. His range isn't what it used to be. Ralphie Big Scoops over at third has never really been a good defender at third base. David Hamilton or Von Grissom at second. I watched Von Grissom be, on a rate basis, one of the worst infield defenders in Atlanta. And then they made that deal straight up him for Chris Sale. And then Tristan Casas, I believe, has the weakest throwing arm in baseball. I was pulling some of this to talk about Ozzie Albies. So it was like a lot of first baseman, and then Ozzie popped up. But I'm pretty sure Casas was towards the bottom, if not the absolute worst throwing arm in baseball at first base. And so defensively, you're gonna, like, I don't feel like you're adding value. I do think Jarren Duran's a great defender. I think Zidane Rafael is pretty good. He can be in center. He can play some shortstop. You may need him to. But it just feels like the issue, you're not as worried offensively as you are defensively. And there's a potential for this team to disappoint their pitching staff at times with just booting routine plays, not being able to make to do stuff and kind of not dominating the routine play. They're not going to be doing that. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Defensively, this lineup is pretty atrocious. While it's one of the best lineups offensively in the sport, and definitely in the American League East, it's one of the worst defensively in the sport and in the American League East, because it's bad. But they did have opportunities this offseason to improve upon that when, you know, they were in talks with Alex Bregman and now
Nolan Arenado.
And reports came out yesterday that they are back in talks with the St. Louis Cardinals about Nolan Arenado. So they still can improve it. But you got to figure out what to do at that point when you bring in Nolan Arenado. You got to figure out what to do with Rafael Devers. And does that mean that Tristan Casas is definitely gone? Because if you bring in Nolan Arenado with what he did in 2024, he might not be that bad in 2025, but he's not going to be the Nolan Arenado that he was 5 years ago offensively. He'll still be great defensively, but your offense is going to take a hit because you'll have to Tristan Casas is probably the odd man out there between Nolan Arenado, Rafael Devers, and Tristan Casas.
Yeah, he's the most attractive trade asset from a potential and a cost and things like that. The real issue, like if you get Arenado or Bregman, you need to move Devers to first base, one, just because of his defense is so bad, and then two, to make room at third. But you have the issue of Casas is the one you have to move because your DH spot is clogged up by Masataka Yoshida. They signed him to a 5-year deal prior to 2023. 5 years, $90 million. His payroll amount the next three seasons is $18.6 million. But he's in your DH role. He's not quite performing like you would want a DH to perform. Batting average is great. His two seasons, 280 and 289, he's hit a combined 25 home runs and almost in just over 1,000 plate appearances. It's like 1,001 plate appearances. He hit 25 home runs across two seasons, right? He's stolen 10 bases. On base isn't bad. 349 his first year, 338 his second year. But he's a 1.5 war player. And because you can't move that deal, nobody wants him unless you attach a really good prospect, you're in a situation where you may have to give up a promising young first baseman in Tristan Casas just to have room for everybody because you're stuck with that deal. Is there any possibility that like they just, I don't know, wait for an injury and in the meantime option Casas down to Triple A Worcestershire or something and just keep everybody? Like just add Arenado or Bregman anyway. You could always put Bregman at second. I don't think you should, but you could. But is it possible that you just move Devers to first anyway? Send Casas down and just wait for someone to get injured, because that's the thing in baseball is there's always injuries and depth will always work itself out.
Yeah. I mean, he does have three options left. I still think that if
heck,
you're going to
Yoshida has options left. Everybody has options, but Story endeavors.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. So you could theoretically, you could option Masataka Yoshida down and keep Tristan Casas as a DH. And then your offense would still be a pretty solid offense if they do add Alex Bregman or Nolan Arenado. Because, I mean, Tristan Casas, last year he was hurt for most of the year, but still, uh-huh. Even still, in 243 plate appearances, he put up a 119 WRC plus and 0.6 of war playing first base. So none of that's defensive. And he's what he did offensively last year, especially before he went down with injury. He was on pace for a great season and was probably going to get top 10, if not top 5 MVP votes at the pace he was on. And so they've definitely got a dilemma that they have put themselves in, especially with that Masataka Yoshida contract. But yeah, with all of them having options, they do have options.
Was he really that good early?
In the before he went down with injury, he was on a tear, man.
Let me see. April 20th, where was he? 244 average, 857 OPS, 6 homers, 10 RBI. Oh, he was good. I mean, he wasn't – okay.
But the American League as a whole was pretty weak. I don't think he would have won the MVP, but he would have been top 10 at the worst in my
– okay. All right. I hadn't really dug into it. I'm like, wait, that feels really – like. But okay, yeah, sure. Yeah, it's a weird place to be. And I do think you could just bring in Bregman and stick him at second. Last year, he did have the weakest throwing arm of any third baseman. He said he's open to second base. Nolan Arenado apparently was responding to fans on Instagram over the weekend. And somebody's like, you should come to Boston. He's like, I'm down. Just a matter of working the deal out with the Cardinals. So we'll see if that happens. But the other thing to think about here is you do also have a ton of really, really good prospects. Top prospect, Kristen Campbell, who can play second. He can play some short and outfield, but he's considered a second baseman first. He's an on-roster invitee to spring training. Marcelo Meyer, their top prospect at shortstop, he's a non-roster invitee to spring training. Roman Anthony, who a lot of people consider the number one prospect in the sport, he is a non-roster invitee to spring training. And so you have a lot of youth, and it feels like a lot of this youth can fill in, with the exception of Roman Anthony, can fill in at positions where you need some improvement. Because again, Story's been hurt and not as good as he could be. At shortstop, second base has been a revolving door, whether it's, again, David Hamilton, Vaughn Grissom, all these guys. Grissom spent most of the year hurt, isn't a good defender, things like that. So here's the thing. Do you have to make a deal, or can you just sit tight knowing that, hey, we have two or three top prospects that can plug into this roster as soon as this year to fill the hole we have at second base and help out with the infield defense, right? If Meyer takes over at short and you move Story to second, that instantly makes the defense at both those spots better.
Yeah, no. Yeah, you're absolutely right. They don't have to make a deal. I think that they've kind of, it's like we talked about at the beginning of this segment. They're one of the teams in baseball that should be spending more than any other team in the sport, and yet they don't. And I think they've kind of realize that maybe, and that's why they added Garrett Crochet to their rotation, who was Tanner Houck, Brian Bello, and Cutter Crawford. and so now they've been all offseason talking about signing Alex Bregman, and then in talks with the Cardinals multiple times over the offseason about Nolan Arenado. It's like they're trying to actually finally catch up financially with what the Yankees are doing. But no, I agree. They absolutely can wait, especially for Christian Campbell. According to FanGraphs, they're projecting him to be in the majors for a long time and get over 400 plate appearances this year. So it's definitely something that they have options for. But at the same time, you and I talked about this before we came on to record today. Marcelo Meyer and Roman Anthony are also both left-handed batters in a lineup that's already very heavily left-handed batters. Christian Campbell's a righty, but they are very left-handed heavy, and I think that at some point they got to figure out something with that also.
Yeah, I mean, it is right now. There's three platoon guys, right? Yoshida and probably Ref Snyder are your DH platoon lefties and righties. Abreu may also come out for Ref Snyder against righties. David Hamilton and Vaughn Grissom are going to platoon. Maybe it's just the Braves fan in me. I'd like to have a guy to take over those roles. Moving on a little bit here, going to the pitching staff, starting the rotation, Garrett Crochet, lefty. We feel like obviously he's your number one. You feel good about that. He was able to give 157 innings last year, despite the White Sox not really obviously being one of the worst teams in baseball history. Tanner Houck, Brian Bello, Cutter Crawford, Walker Buehler behind them is not a bad 1-5. I feel like you're just banking on guys either returning to form like Buehler or rebounding from tough seasons like Brian Bello. Am I wrong in thinking that this is probably the second or third best rotation in the division behind the Yankees?
No, I don't think so at all. And just real quick, I will say you were looking at the 2025 projections again. He only pitched 146 innings.
Gosh darn it. Yeah. FanGraphs made that change, and we did that on the Yankee show yesterday. I did that. So, yeah, 146 last year. Thank you.
No problem. Just wanted to, before somebody yelled at you in the comments, wanted to
thank you. Yeah.
I think it's right there as the second best rotation after adding Garrett Crochet and Walker Buehler. And what's crazy is while Walker Buehler did not have a good 2024 because of he was coming back from injury, he was still great in the playoffs and he still closed the game, got the save in the game that closed out the World Series over the New York Yankees. You're welcome, Boston. And they're projecting him to be their fifth best starter. I may be higher on Walker Buehler than most people, and I think we've talked about this earlier in the offseason, but I think that he should be slotted in as the second starter behind Garrett Crochet, honestly. I mean, just from his track record before his injury, what he did before his Tommy John surgery, he was on pace to be a legitimate ace. And
yeah,
I don't think that you could discount him for having Tommy John surgery that much, but it is. Yeah, I agree with you. It is probably the second best rotation on paper in the American League East.
Yeah, Toronto's pretty good, but Toronto's also a lot older guys, and you have more questions about health and stuff there, I think, when you get to those older guys. So I think I'm okay with calling this the second best. I do think that Buehler could end up, obviously, much better than the fifth spot. I don't – it doesn't really matter where Fangraphs puts him, right? It's where – like, does he pitch the third game of the year, the fifth game of the year, the second, whatever. But I do think he could definitely – I mean, you gave him a qualifying offer, in essence, to see if he can move up and be an amazing dude, and then maybe you can re-sign him, maybe not. We'll see what happens. I do also think that they have the possibility of adding two more quality starters later in the year. Both Lucas Giolito and Patrick Sandoval had internal brace surgery last year. Giolito had it in March. That's typically a 12-month time frame. We haven't, I haven't heard a lot from the outside, not a Boston fan. I haven't heard a lot about him being ready for the start of the year, but I can't imagine it would be too deep into the year before you'd be looking at adding Lucas Giolito to this rotation. And then Patrick Sandoval had his in June. It's not out of the realm of possibility that, you know, he's back by the trade deadline and he's giving you innings either as a long reliever out of the pen or in the rotation making spot starts by the end of the year. So you do have some reinforcements there as far as already under team control. And then they've got a couple notable names in the farm system as well. Richard Fitz, Auburn guy, for the record. They got him December 2023 from the Yankees in a trade. Cooper Criswell's been up a little bit here and there. Quinn Priester's a guy they got over the summer from the Pirates. Like they've got plenty of starter options to fill in. You feel like the depth is okay. The question's just the quality of the guys in the rotation and what's going to happen there. But either way, I feel good about this rotation in a way that I probably didn't feel going into the offseason because of the injuries and because of, you know, the fact that your best starters were Tanner Houck and Brandon Bello.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And to be honest with you, until you mentioned Lucas Giolito and Patrick Sandoval, I had not scrolled down that far and actually looked at that portion of the thing. And like you said, I'm also on the outside looking in. I forgot that they had Lucas Giolito. I forgot they signed Patrick Sandoval. And so just when those guys come back and you're pushing Tanner Houck, Brian Bello, and Cutter Crawford down another spot in the depth chart, that rotation is very solid just from amount of depth that they have at the major league level and on the injured list currently. And plus, you know, Dick Fitz and Cooper Criswell, they've got the depth and they've got the options. Plus Patrick Sandoval adds another lefty to their rotation when mm-hmm. he comes back, they'll have two lefties. And I agree with you that he'd probably be more of a long reliever since he's coming back so late in the season. He'd be more of a long reliever and get a spot start here or there, but still adding another lefty to that rotation will work wonders for him down the stretch.
Yeah, and then in the pen, three lefties right now, but Aroldis Chapman coming in to partner with Liam Hendricks in the back end, replacing the departed Kenley Jansen. And then, you know, Justin Slayton, Greg Weissert, Michael Fulmer's an NRI that's expected to make the team as a middle relief guy. Garrett Whitlock, internal brace as well back in May. He's a second half of the season guy to come back, and it's obviously easier to slot back in as a reliever than it is to slot in as a starter. I feel good about this bullpen. I don't think it's the best bullpen, but you've got two really experienced guys on the back end between Hendricks and Chapman. Hendricks obviously coming back from an injury. I don't believe he pitched in the majors at all last year, but Hendricks and Chapman, two guys who have both closed, who give you versatility. Chapman gives you gas, obviously. Slayton's been a pretty good reliever in his career, ERA under 3. Weissert was just barely over 3 last year. I think it's a pretty solid pen, and when you look at all of the pieces they have in the minors to supplement that pen with, right, they added former Brave Sean Newcomb, they added Jacob Webb, a lot of guys on NRIs, and then obviously, like we said, the possibility of sticking a Whitlock back in there, a Sandoval later in the year if you want to, starter Chris Murphy, who had standard Tommy John. He's probably not coming back this year, but you never know. I feel like not the best bullpen in the American League, but like it's pretty decent and above average. And there's no reason this Red Sox team can't be legitimately fighting for the second spot behind the Yankees. And maybe even if everything works right health-wise and Trevor Story's resurgence, give them a run for their money for the division.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. This bullpen, you know, we have talked about teams throughout the offseason where their strength is offense and pitching, but their bullpen's weak, or their strength is their bullpen and their offense, but their rotation is weak. And it, for the Red Sox, their offense, their starting rotation, and their bullpens are all their strengths, and it's their defense that's weak. It's a solid bullpen, and you still got to wait and see what Liam Hendricks is able to do, because like you said, he did not pitch in the majors in 2024, and it still should be a solid unit. And I agree. I think that after looking deeper into their roster and their depth chart and how much depth they do have at all the pretty much every position through their minor league system as well, that yeah, they do have a roster top to bottom that should be able to compete for an American League wildcard spot at the very least, and you know, be right up there competing with the Yankees. And that just begs the question, what has been the issue over the last couple of years, other than, you know, injuries to some of their top guys?
Injuries, yeah. And it's the Yankees feel like they're very much top heavy, right? It's Aaron Judge, it's Garrett Cole, it's Max Fried. And if one of those guys or multiple of those guys get hurt, obviously, I feel like the Yankees don't necessarily have the depth to match up well with a team like the Red Sox that, I mean, you look at the outfield, right? You've got four MLB caliber outfielders because Masataka Yoshida can absolutely play the outfield. They don't have him do it. You put him in left, right? You don't want to get overexposed to him, but you can put him in left. He can play the outfield. Rob Refschneider is a platoon bat. He had a 130 WRC plus last year in 300 plus plate appearances. Like, it's a really good, like, it's just deep. We talked about second base being a weakness, but you've got like three guys who can play second base and one of the best prospects in the sport at that position too. So I do feel like this roster is maybe a little better equipped to handle an injury than the Yankees, with the exception of maybe Raffy. Like, if Devers gets hurt, I feel like you are going to struggle there, simply from a, he is by far your best offensive weapon. But outside of that, this is a very almost resilient roster, because you have plenty of guys who can do it. It's just a matter of if health is on your side here, this is a super competitive team. And I kind of feel like they don't really, because they were so quiet in free agency and have been acting like broke boys the last couple seasons, people don't necessarily think that this is a quality organization, but ton of really good prospects, quality all over the field. It's just a matter of putting it all together. And I feel like they're a team I'm a little more comfortable with being aspirational if I were to like place a futures bet than I would over a team like the Orioles.
Oh yeah, 100%. I completely agree with you.
We're going to get to the Orioles tomorrow, people. Just wait on that. We're going to get to the Orioles.
We had to push them back a day. We have many, many thoughts on the Orioles. But they're not
nice ones.
Not at all. I, you know, kind of to wrap us up here, assuming that the Boston Red Sox roster stays healthy, everybody stays healthy, all their top guys stay on the field 150-plus games, and they finished the year with another record at or close to 500. Do we start talking about Alex Cora's extension being way too soon?
I think they got to do better than 500. If he can win 85, 90 games, if Alex Cora wins 90 games here, then yeah, he's probably qualifying for an extension. I don't know. They've got to actually put it all together. You can't blame injuries for too long. Or am I just... Wait, am I hearing your question wrong?
So, they gave... They actually... I'm looking it up right now to make sure I'm correct. They gave an extension in the middle of last year.
That's right. They extended him mid-year.
Yep.
Like, 3 years. Back in July. A three-year extension in mid-July. Okay.
And they finished the year with an 81-81 record.
Oh, that's right, because
after going 78,
the news broke before they got beat 20-7 by the Rockies. That's right. I remember it being something like they're talking on the broadcast about his extension as the Rockies are just blasting the Red Sox. Okay, I'm sorry, I answered that backwards. Yeah, no. If they come into 500 again, unless you have massive injuries, you're right. going to talk about that was a bad deal. Like, it's the talent's there. The players like him. Like they like him. They appreciate him. But at a certain point, you have to be able to translate it into wins on the field. And you, while they haven't acquired the studs that like the Yankees have gotten, things like that, you've got a lot of really promising players, you know, all-stars. You had some rookies last year came up and contributed. You've got a bunch of promising prospects on the verge. Cora's got to put it together. I would say if Cora doesn't win 85 to 90 games, he could potentially be not on the hot seat, but he could be, there's going to be whispers about, yes, this extension was a bad idea. People who didn't like it last year, but I think even outside of the team, you're going to hear people say this extension was a bad idea if they don't do something this year.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think that if they do win 85 to 90 games, but they're still not competitive, like competing for a wild card spot, like if for some reason the American League just goes crazy this year,
if 90 wins doesn't compete for a wild card, something's wrong in baseball,
right? But no, if the American League just goes crazy this year and they win 90 games and not in a wild card spot, I still think that, because in 2022 and 2023, both years they went 78 and 84. And then in 2024, they improved to 81 and 81, which is improvement.
Even, yeah.
But I think that they got enamored by his first year as a manager in the sport, where he won 108 games, won the World Series, but they had one of the best rosters the sport has ever freaking seen that year. And yep. I don't know. I've never understood the Alex Cora love as a manager. I mean, he's a decent bench coach, but I don't like the extension, and I think that they need to be in the playoffs this year in order for it to be worth it.
Yeah. Okay, here's some fun. I went and pulled the American League last year. 90 wins would have put them as the second wildcard team that had been ahead of the Royals and Tigers, who were tied at 86 and 76. 90 wins would also have won them the American League West. The West winner, the Astros, finished at 88 wins.
Yeah.
The Yankees had 94. The Orioles had 91. So the Red Sox would be third place in their own division and then in the second wildcard. So, okay. We feel good about the Red Sox. They just have to actually do it now. And I think that's kind of going to be what we're going to be watching for this year. Do us a favor, folks. You're listening on audio. Leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell. Either way, tell your friends. Go to firstpitchpodcast.com to get daily MLB news, notes, and analysis. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.